You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of January 31st, 2018, and the hunt is on for another good game.
The hunt is on.
Is that a song?
Yeah, the heat is on.
Oh,
the
I see.
The heat is on. Everybody, this is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Alboy.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. New year, new games, George. New year, new games.
Oh my God. I was talking to a friend recently about like how people use that new year, new you.
New year,
unironically,
new me.
And how they're just the absolute worst.
Fuck. Oh man. Let's go off on a tangent real quick here at the top of the show. We're going to talk about what we've been playing recently because we've been playing a little potpourri of games. Mm-hmm. And but before we do so, fucking dry January?
Yeah. Is this
what
a thing?
What the fuck? Where did that come from?
Is this a thing? Is this like a cleanse? I'm not familiar with dry January.
It's people who are deciding not to drink for the month of January.
I mean, more power to him. You know what I mean? Lay off the sauce. I get it.
That's fine, but there's a couple things. There's plenty of people at work, and there's some other people that I know that, you know, we're all talking about this, and half of them are like, "Oh, I can't wait till February so I can drink again." And it's like, well,
you're like, I'm gonna fucking take it to a dangerous level.
Yeah,
drinking.
And it's like, well, I don't know if this dry January sure really point. Taught you the lesson that it was meant to teach you.
Yeah, I have a lot of people in the workplace. I think this is probably true of anybody working in San Francisco, but who are like into the whole 30.
Oh
kick.
My God, the fucking whole 30.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Which I never really. I mean. Whatever, I have not jumped on that bandwagon, but just to talk shit about something I know almost nothing about, I find it crazy that people just swear off, like, what is ostensibly a healthy food? Like, dietary fiber.
Yeah, know? That's the thing where it's like, any fad diet, like, basically you can essentially evaluate the long-term efficacy of a diet by how extreme it is.
Yes,
it's like,
that's true.
Oh no, I can't have any sugar, including apples. And it's like, really? You can't have even sugar that comes naturally inside of a fruit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a doctor a day, you know what I mean? Like an apple a day. Have you not heard of it? Have you seen the raw water kick?
Oh my God, this is...
I mean, now we're like way off in the deep zone of like crazy diet fads.
The deep raw water.
We need like a Red Dead Redemption for snake oil salesmen, you know? Because I feel like there's some good shit here. Like in the modern era of like fad diets, there's a great like little narrative indie game about like getting schmucks to pay hundreds of dollars for like garbage.
Yeah, it's fucking Snake Oil Tycoon, where it's a sim game where you build up your stupid fad diet and get a bunch of rubes to buy into
exactly. Or like Civilization, right? But instead of really establishing anything, you just establish shell companies to get VC funding before you take it all away.
Now, Maxis would like to introduce its new Civilization game, Civilization Crumbles.
I mean, the latest. Yeah, it's or like Bitcoin, right?
Did you hear
about Ponzi coin?
Ponzi coin? No. Can I get in on the ground floor?
Yeah. So this guy invents a cryptocurrency called Ponzi coin, sells a bunch of Ponzi coins to people, and then just makes off with their money and doesn't give them shit. It's right there in the name. What were you thinking?
Shh, George, stop. We can't tell people this. I was planning an ExperiencePoints.net initial coin offering
EXP
for February.
Coin.
Yeah, EXP coin. Our ICO is in the works here.
Well, I can tell you all of my PC power is dedicated to running whatever it takes to like kill big old monsters. So
We got to use our computers and our video game systems for what they were meant for, which is slaughtering animals.
Virtual
animals.
I'm not trying to mine Bitcoin. I'm trying to mine iron ore to build out sweet weapons.
Let's talk about a few games we've been playing. So obviously the big one is Monster Hunter World. Do you want to start with that or do you want to start with the other things that
let's finish with Monster Hunter, because okay. I feel like if we don't, if we start with it, we may end up going this entire podcast.
That's
we've already
true.
Spent 10 minutes talking about raw water, so.
You know, the fluoridation is just a government conspiracy, okay? Ugh, you got to get that out of your body. You got to cleanse.
You got to cleanse.
I got a juice for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what besides Monster Hunter, what have you been playing?
So I've been playing L.A. Noire.
Yes.
We talked a little bit about this on a previous podcast, but I've gotten my way a little bit more into it.
Mm.
I want to retract some statements I made earlier because I feel like I was talking shit about L.A. Noire. I like L.A. Noire quite a bit. I was suggesting that it looks bad on the Nintendo Switch.
Mm.
That is still true.
Mm.
But
you compared it to the other versions that came out, or is it just a Switch thing, or is it just that the game didn't age well?
That's true. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good point. I haven't compared. Mm. I guess I should do my homework and go on YouTube and like watch a Let's Play of some.
But
of
it came
stuff.
Out on the PS3 or the PS4.
Oh man, I want to say PS3.
So in that case, the Switch should be able to handle it. You know, it's not the Switch is essentially kind of PS4. You know. Well, or at least PS3 level capabilities,
I mean,
right?
Again, I'm sure it's probably the game and not the Switch. I think, I mean, look at Breath of the Wild. That game is beautiful, right? I do like the game. So graphics aside, I am really enjoying it. Hmm. The one thing I'll say is kind of weird is I was playing on the bus today,
mm-hmm.
and I had to investigate a naked corpse in a
park.
It was kind of awkward.
Fully nude?
Fully nude. Full nudity. I mean, I have to say, I was really surprised by how dark L.A. Noire gets. I guess I should have known. It's L.A. Noire, not L.A.
I guess it is called L.A. Noire, but still.
Still. It is a very graphic, mature game, which is pretty remarkable on the Switch, right? I mean, we all know, like, oh, Doom's coming to the Switch and Dark Souls is coming to the Switch, so they're amping up some of that mature content. But it is pretty crazy that we're in an era where we're playing games that, you know, seriously tackle issues of like domestic abuse and racism and like violence and like rape and terrible, terrible crimes.
Yeah.
And they describe them in graphic detail in addition to showing some of it.
Huh.
In that sense, it's actually kind of nice that the graphics are not great. Any more would be like a little bit freaky, to be honest.
Hmm.
But it's cool. It's actually reminding me quite a bit of Red Dead Redemption in a way, because it is sort of having fun exploring just some of the general themes of, like, you know, like when you look at Chinatown, the film.
Forget about it, George. It's Chinatown.
Forget about it. It's L.A. Noire. There's a lot in there, right? Like, you have a really cool, gripping noir film, but you have also have a really interesting piece that's about, like, race politics and water politics and, like, just general apathy in the structure of society in Los Angeles. And in the same way that Red Dead tackles some, you know, some themes around like greed and exploitation and race in these like little narrative bits, L.A. Noire does the same thing, right? So like I just did a mission that was about like domestic murder, and before then there was one about like Hollywood and the way that people come to LA on this idea of like, I'm going to be a star. And then they get sort of eaten alive. And in this case, like quite literally abused, you know.
Oh, I thought you were going to say quite literally eaten alive. I was like, whoa.
I wish. Oh my gosh. I do love that cannibal mission in Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
No, no one is actually eaten. But I mean, I don't know how artfully it's done, but I do think that it's, I really enjoy playing a game that in my mind is like, oh, right, this is back in the day when Rockstar cared about being tactful with their political message in a way that Grand Theft Auto V, I don't think, really was for the most part.
I mean, that might be a difference between the Rockstar North team and the, gosh, what was that team? Team Bondi or something?
Yeah.
They were from Australia. So, I mean, there is some.
That's true. Yeah.
You know,
well, but I mean, there's a. There's something that unites those two worlds, right? Like L.A. Noire and Red Dead Redemption, I think would actually make, it's impossible because the games are so long. But if you were to sit down and say, I'm going to play both of these games and sort of think about like this
as
open
a
world. Yeah, as a package and think about like these missions and the genre as it relates to like Americana. I love it. I just really like the idea that both of these games really chew on Americana in that way.
It's cool to hear that, because I, as someone who doesn't, well, as someone that spends a fair amount of time going back and forth between LA, it's kind of cool to have a historical LA story. That makes me more excited to play it.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it's super cool that it's on the Switch. Like, this is a game that I bought on PC during a Steam sale easily 3+ years ago and never touched it.
Yeah.
And it's only now that it's on the Switch that I'm actually playing it. And so, you know, in a world where, like, you know, we're getting a new Shadow of the Colossus, Final Fantasy VII is ostensibly coming out at some point, right? Like, we've got an endless supply of churning out remakes.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of nice to see that we could pretty easily just take something that worked and give it new life on
the Switch. How's the acting in it? Has the acting held up?
It is really strong still. Mm-hmm. I think all of the actors are great. There's some actors in LA Noire that it's like, oh, I remember you, or like, I recognize you from a movie or a show that came out well after LA Noire came out.
Yeah.
The one thing I'll say is it's still really weird to go in scenes where you're doing like interviews where you'll suddenly be aggressive and the voice actor will be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Get out of my face, detective.
Yeah.
And then the next response will be like, oh, good question, detective. Actually, you know, like, there's that really big jarring. And it's just sort of what you get with these types of like choose your own adventure, like narratives. When you have people responding in every which way, it's difficult to get like a really good tonal consistency out of your actors.
It's also difficult to, I mean, it's difficult to thread the needle of, you don't want to just give the player word for word what the character is going to say, because the style of the game is a little bit of spontaneity in how the scene plays out.
Yeah.
But then again, you kind of have the, you know, the shepherd phenomenon where it's like, well, I just meant to say no, but it really came out as no, you dick.
Yeah, exactly. It is like, there are times where it is just monstrous. The other thing is, there are voice actors that are very, very good. And then there's like, every time you have to call into the station, the same woman answers in the same monotone. How can I help you, detective? And you're just like, Jesus.
Hey, she's just
Christ.
Doing a job. Okay.
I'm like, so it sounds like an automation, because you're doing this like every other mission, and it's clearly the same line of dialogue.
she's just punching the clock,
I guess. Yeah. There's really, you really don't get the sense of like friendly cops in the station.
There's not a lot of camaraderie.
It's no Die Hard, you know. It's no Tango and Cash.
Man, there are a lot of cool buddy. There's a lot of jovial 1980s cops. Well, that's your problem. This is what, set in the 30s or something.
I don't have a dog detective yet. This is before dogs were allowed on the force, before the Air Bud Act of 1962.
Dark times.
No rule says dogs can't shoot unarmed civilians.
I have been playing an adventure game as well.
Oh, really now?
I have been playing Oxenfree, also on the Switch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that?
I think it does some really interesting stuff with the dialogue, where the characters... So it's based... It's a mostly 2D style adventure game where you're walking around inspecting points of interest... slightly, you know, there's some depth to it, but it's mostly kind of a side-scrolling type of deal. And when the characters around the protagonist are talking, they just continue on with their conversation, and you can interrupt them with your input, or, you know, by shouting out something, you know, that you see or something.
Yep.
And then they'll try to naturally restart the conversation. So they'll be like, well, anyway, like I was saying, there's a lot of weird... kind of pickup dialogue that I think is pretty, it doesn't always work, but it's cool to tackle something like that and try to make a conversation sound naturalistic.
Well, and then the opposite as well, right? Where like, if you don't respond and they ask you a question, they'll like pester you or just move on of like, okay, clearly she doesn't want to answer.
Yeah, it's, they do. And you know, you see some of that stuff in the Telltale games, but this stuff is more, in many times it's faster, whereas the Telltale stuff usually still gives you a couple beats to decide. The conversational style of Oxenfree is more natural sounding, and you do have to pay attention. And sometimes it's one of the games, even more so than the Telltale games, where not saying anything, where just staying silent or listening, seems like a real legitimate choice. in a stronger way than even something like The Walking Dead does. And I think that it's a pretty cool dynamic to have those characters have a conversation and it really feel like, well, am I the type of person that always has to get the last word, or am I the type of person that kind of listens and only says something every once in a while? And both of those things seem very natural in the game.
Yeah. I also find it interesting that, you know, there's like a collection of video games that star teenagers.
Yeah.
Like specifically people in this age group. And I feel like every time these games come up, there are conversations about like how accurate does this reflect being a teenager. You know, I think the one that gets a lot of shit, I would argue unfairly, is the gosh, what is it called? I love this game too. The time travel indie game. Oh,
I keep on wanting to call it Stranger Things, but it's not Stranger Things.
Yes, it's strange. It's something like that.
Man, Life is Strange.
Yes, Life is Strange. I just bought the second season too. What am I thinking? Yeah. Life is Strange, I think unfairly gets a lot of shit for it, but I think a lot of like whether or not you're pulling off this feeling of like being in that time and place is so heavily on the dialogue.
Yeah.
And you can't be too careful here because, you know, kids, when I was a kid, right?
Back in the day,
I thought I was the most uncool person in the world, and everybody around me was the coolest person in the world. And I'm sure everyone else thought the same thing, right? And so, like, how you write it, like, people can't be too punchy, they can't be too witty, but they also can't be totally dumb or unresponsive. I think Oxenfree is probably one of the better teenage stories, just purely in terms of how the kids come out. And I think it's partially because of what you're talking about, like, the timing of it, right? Like, things will pass you by. People will get characters in Oxenfree will get mad at each other and yell at each other in these like really natural ways where you'll go to like having a conversation and then someone might misinterpret what you say or what somebody else says and they kind of snap at you. Mm-hmm. Like there's that sort of bitchy character. I forget her name in Oxenfree.
Oh yeah. I think it's like Clarissa or something like that.
Yeah. Perfect name for that archetype too. But yeah, I mean, I think Oxenfree is really impressive in that way.
I was thinking about that dialogue the other day, and I think one of the things that people criticize a lot is, oh, it sounds stilted, or it sounds like these people are trying too hard to sound like teens. And then I was surrounded by a bunch of teens on the BART train the other day, and I forgot how hard teens try to sound and look cool and witty or funny, and... Yep. It's like, oh, right. They are trying so hard to be amusing, and it's super grating and annoying and not natural sounding. And anyone with half a brain knows that they're just putting on this character. And it is super annoying and grating. And so in some of those games where the teens are extremely like cringeworthy, it does actually speak very true to life in a way that you only realize if you had to be stuck in a BART train with 10 teens.
So when you're playing, because you're playing Oxenfree on the Switch,
yep.
So you're playing as a teen with a bunch of teens around you.
Oh my god!
On the BART.
Oh my god! It's very meta. Yeah, I turned my hat backwards and I was like, "What up, kids?"
Yeah. I also really just like the general atmosphere of Oxenfree.
It is
the,
cool. Like, I haven't finished yet, but I'm very much looking forward to how they resolve everything with the supernatural stuff that's starting to happen.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see whether or not you're satisfied with it. Because I know it was a little bit controversial for some people.
Yeah.
I think it works. I think it's really cool.
Yeah. Are you playing anything else besides MHW?
It's just MHW right now. I have Life is Strange, but I have not touched it yet.
I will quickly, before we talk about Monster Hunter, I'll say that another game that I've really fallen back down the rabbit hole on, and again, because of the Nintendo Switch, is The Binding of Isaac.
Oh, right, yeah.
God help me. I fucking bought that. God, how many times have I played it, or how many times have I bought it? Because I don't know which is crazier.
I mean, haven't you seen everything?
No. Every single time I play, I see something new.
Really?
Because they've added so many expansion packs and DLC things. And so I bought what is the most current iteration of The Binding of Isaac. Mm-hmm. And every single time I have to pull out my phone and go on a wiki to figure out what this item does.
Is it all... in there, like when you buy it on the Switch, you get all the expansions?
Yes, it's Binding of Isaac, Afterbirth Plus or whatever they call it these days.
Yeah.
And it, to my knowledge, it is the most complete version of the game after all of these years. And like I said, every single time I play this fucking game, I see something new, which is astounding after, I don't know, how long has that game been out? 7 years, 8 years or something?
I mean, maybe he's just secretly patching it.
Oh my God, I wouldn't put it past that team, but it's just, it's an amazing game, and it's also amazing on the Switch, and it's also one of those games where when I am in public playing it, it's like, oh, I'm this weird deformed zombie kid who's crying tears at piles of poop. I wonder how many people are watching this.
That's so funny. You know, I find it fascinating also that the Switch is probably the very first Nintendo console that I'll own on which I own more non-Nintendo games than Nintendo games.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, well, shall we venture to Monster Hunter World?
A whole new world.
A new fantastic beast to kill. Monster Hunter World dropped on Friday.
Yes.
And I've been playing all weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Killing all kinds of monsters. You've touched it a little bit.
I bought it on the weekend and then put a couple hours into it, and
what convinced you? Like, because this is a game that has a rabid following over the years across many iterations.
Yeah.
And if I were to write down, like, if I had a whiteboard that's like pros and cons for Monster Hunter, I actually feel like there'd be a decent number of cons.
You know,
like super Japanese, like super weird,
freaky really cat convoluted things.
Like MMO-like, that'd be been the pros and the cons.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a lot that you could come to the table with when you're thinking about this game, with, like, certain assumptions about the way it works. What convinced you to make that purchase?
I had been thinking about playing Monster Hunter for a long time.
20 years.
I mean, close. Because when the first one came out in, like, I don't know, the mid-2000s or something like that, And also it just blew up. I mean, I it was something that propelled entire consoles. Remember, we would always read those news stories in Japan about whichever mobile platform could get Monster Hunter, it was basically GG after that.
Yeah. So the first Monster Hunter came out March 11th, 2004.
Oh, man. That 14 is a long
years
time ago.
Of Monster
14
Hunter.
14 years ago.
Yeah. If you were born on the day Monster Hunter came out, you're like in high school.
And you're the chosen one.
And you're wearing like tons of like spiky weeb.
Yeah,
armor.
A lot of leather buckles.
Yeah.
I always was interested in it. It seemed like something that I was just a big blind spot for me because it was so popular and I had just never really played it at all. And then it got to a certain point where it seemed so to have so much depth that it was almost intimidating to go into.
Yes, definitely.
And the fan base was so rabid about it in a way that is very reminiscent to something like, I don't know,
you know,
Dark
what it
Souls or something like that.
Yeah. You know what it reminds me of is when you like walk into a brick and mortar game store and you see a bunch of people painting Warhammer miniatures.
Yes, and then you just
go,
back
like,
out.
Yeah, because there's a moment part of you that's like, man, that Warhammer miniature is pretty cool. And then you see everyone with, like, you know, packages of paint and fine little brushes and like measurement sticks and stuff. And you're just like, I don't think I'm ready for this.
And I mean, the other thing too is I was, you know, kind of toying with the idea of getting the 3DS version. I forget which one. Maybe that was Tri or maybe that was Monster Hunter 4 or something. I forget which one. But the prospect of playing something for that long on a system that isn't super ergonomic actually was a deciding factor for me.
Yes.
Where it's like, man, I don't know if I could spend 100 hours and ravage my hands with the Nintendo DS on this.
Yeah. Well, my issue was always that the game seemed like it was designed for multiplayer, and I just never put two and two together in terms of online play and multiplayer.
Yeah.
Like handheld. That is.
Yeah, it's hard. Something on the handheld, even though there's obviously a million DSs out there, for some reason it feels like most of the people that we play with are not mobile first, and so it is harder to get people together.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is that Monster Hunter World, at this point, is the most accessible Monster Hunter game. Yeah. Which is a pretty remarkable thing to say, considering how absolutely inaccessible Monster Hunter World is.
Yeah, I mean, I can see little hints here and there. You know, it said something like, oh, well, if you grab these items, they're automatically transferred back to your item box back at your base. And I was like, I bet in 2004 that was not the case.
Yeah, that's almost certainly true.
Yeah. So tell me about your initial impressions of this game.
So there's a lot in Monster Hunter World. Like, yeah. Right off the bat, you know that. I mean, it's in the sheer number of, like, random herbs and mushrooms that you can pick up in the battlefield, to the weird, like, upgrade tree where sometimes you have to go down, like, certain paths in order to build certain things, and you have to collect certain weapons, and there's a ton of different amount of people to talk to. And it feels like the complicated MMO system, or it feels like Destiny 1 era when there's X amount of different currencies that you need to familiarize yourself with in order to take on whatever task you have.
Yeah.
But that being said, I think pretty quickly it's quite clear that you don't really have to pay attention to almost any of that. Like, you can just pick your weapon and go to town on whatever fucked up monster you happen to see, and then you can learn some of those other features as you go, right? So, for example, I am 11 hours into Monster Hunter at this point. I feel pretty good about most of the systems that I've encountered, but there are entire, like, strategic items, like explosive bombs, for example, I've never touched. I've only used maybe 3 or 4 weapons of the game's, what, 12 weapons, all of which are just batshit crazy and totally unique. I have not really hunted a whole lot of, like, specific monsters or gone down specific trees, and I've focused on other things. So there's a huge amount of stuff that is there if I want to go get it, but none of it has impeded my progress thus far, and none of it has made me feel like I'm overwhelmed. You know, like, as long as you're willing to say, I'm just going to shove some of this stuff aside, it really doesn't matter all that much whether or not you are getting the absolute most out of every little piece of gameplay paraphernalia.
And for what it's worth, I mean, it's not, I wouldn't say it's the best tutorial system in the world, but every new menu that pops up is, there's a bit of an explanation. And if you click around a couple times, you get to see, like, okay, I generally know now what the difference is between an investigation and, you know, a side quest versus a mainline critical quest. Like, a little bit of description goes a fairly long way in that game. And it does, in a weird way, as you point out, kind of get out of your way if you don't want to engage with it.
Yep. Totally.
What weapon have you mainly been using?
So I've mainly been using the hammer, because I asked around online, and Christian, who's a hardcore Monster Hunter player.
Oh my gosh, yes. We really need to make him our sensei of this whole project here.
He does a Monster Hunter podcast, actually, in a series of videos. Like, this guy's famous in the Monster Hunter world.
he's famous in Monster Hunter.
Yeah, basically asked, like, should I use the hammer? Is that, like, a good beginner item? Like, I know that this game could be overwhelming. I don't want to be overwhelmed. And I heard the affirmative from multiple people that, yes, the hammer was a good choice. And so I tried that out, and it's super satisfying in much of the same way that the Kirk hammer is in Bloodborne.
Yeah.
And just like using a two-handed weapon in Bloodborne, you cannot defend. Like, there's no shield, right? Yeah. So I have to evade. And so the way that I'm interacting with the world feels really natural to me, because it's the way I'm used to interacting with Bloodborne, right? Which is dodge a lot and evade a lot and look for those timing windows where I can lay on a very big hit or a series of, like, massive hits.
Yeah. And so has that been serving you pretty well against the monsters you've come up against?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've been playing a lot of multiplayer as well. Mm. And it's always interesting when people come in with just different types of weapons, right? Uh-huh. Like, the hammer deals blunt damage, which is very good at knocking enemies out, like stunning them so that everyone can get in and pile on the damage. Mm-hmm. And other weapons, like the greatsword, for example, is better at slicing pieces of the monster off, like slicing off a tail. Mm-hmm. So my hammer cannot slice off a tail, but it can knock things out pretty easily. So in the co-op scenarios, it's kind of nice that everybody basically just gets, like, different parts of the monster to focus on. That everyone has their sort of own role.
Yeah.
And the hammer has filled that niche, because I haven't really interacted with anybody that has been using it themselves. And it does quite a bit of damage, and as I expected, is pretty straightforward to use. There's not a whole lot of weird, convoluted, like, charge things up and add them to files and then execute the file in, you know, like the charge blade, for example.
Yeah. See, that's where I might have made a mistake.
Are you using the charge blade?
No, I'm using the gun blade.
Okay.
It's the one where it kind of looks like Squall's sword from Final Fantasy VIII.
Yeah. Well, so correct me. Okay, is this the weapon, though, that, like, the gun isn't really a gun? Like, it just explodes right in front of your weapon?
It's about, like, a mid-range. You can definitely shoot from somewhat afar, but it's really meant to be used as a greatsword with the gun as an ending flourish.
Uh-huh.
And it's cool, but I realized that, okay, well, my timing needs to be really good because the sword part is large, and so there's a fair amount of wind up on it. But also, I need to remember to discharge the bullets at the end of my combo. And also, you need to manually reload that motherfucker.
Wait, what do you mean discharge the bullets? So, you can only fire after a combo?
No, you can fire at any time, but it is better to fire after you've swung the sword a few times, because, you know, let's say you have your classic, like, you know, YYX combo or something, where it's like you swing the sword overhand, then you swing the sword uppercut, and then while you're uppercutting a monster, you can press the bullets so that you're shooting it, kind of like Dante from Devil May Cry or something. And so there's a lot of scenarios where at the end you definitely want to mix up when you're shooting and when you're slicing. And there's also some defensive capabilities where it comes with a shield, but when you're using the shield, you can also charge up all of your bullets to fire like a much more effective and strong projectile blast. But then that, of course, has a cooldown on it that impacts your melee capabilities, because you can have this kind of overcharged version of your bullets, and so it's like, oh crap, I've lost my overcharge because I stupidly used my projectile, now I have to wait for it to charge back up, and oh crap, I forgot to reload my bullets. There's just a lot of stuff to manage, and I was like, man, maybe I should go back to the scimitars or whatever.
Well, I will say, like, I would highly recommend anyone playing Monster Hunter experiment with the weapons and pick one that they just like, because this is the type of game I think where once you pick one weapon and you invest, it's gonna do a disservice to switch. Like, it's gonna feel like you're learning all over again as opposed to mastering the weapon that you used, right?
I'm also worried about how much I'm like, I don't know if this is the case or not, but like, if you dump stats into it, if you dump any sorts of material into it, like how long that will take to build up a new weapon.
Well, I mean, the plus side is at any point when you are upgrading your weapons, you can downgrade them as long as it's within that tree. So even if you invested into like building like a Puka Puka sword or whatever the fuck, you could downgrade it and get the mats back and use those mats on a different weapon.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, which is, so again, something that is a little bit more friendly than this game could have been. Yeah. You know?
Well, and then on top of that, like, there's not even a ton of weapons. Like, there are maybe, I mean, at this point in the game, there are maybe three like core branches of, or two really, like bone and iron weapons. Mm-hmm. And then there are the upgrade paths that I can go. And one weapon isn't necessarily better than the other. It sort of depends on the circumstance.
Yeah.
Like, I've been getting into, I've been messing around with hunter horns where it's like a support item. And, you know, if I'm fighting a monster that causes poison, then there's a particular horn for that. And if I'm fighting a monster that uses fire, there's a different horn for that. So, I mean, pros and cons for that, because I know some people don't really like the idea of like, oh, okay, I have to build all the weapons and I have to really diversify my portfolio. But I, for one, really enjoy the fact that it doesn't feel like I have to pick one weapon and then upgrade it over and over and over again. Like, there are like big goals with little discrete steps towards achieving that goal that I can take, that in my mind is really rewarding.
Yeah. I mean, I think not getting locked in and being exposed to the variety of systems in that game, which are numerous, is cool. I wouldn't want to shortchange myself. So I think I might, like you said, I might kind of experiment with a few others and just see how they are. But I mean, and again, that's kind of what drew me to this game, where it's like, I said this a few times last year, where if this is it, if I don't get into Monster Hunter now, I probably never will, because this seems to be the most beginner friendly one. And also the one that's doing interesting stuff with, the environmental effects in the world and the multiplayer and just
there's a lot
kind
of really
open
cool
world.
Environmental effects that you can trigger.
I mean, it was just cool. Like I was chasing after a monster and the monster was ran down kind of a cliff and I was running above it on the cliff and I jumped on top of the monster.
That's so satisfying to ride a monster.
There's a lot of cool, weird things that are hidden in that game.
I really had this assumption going into the game that it was going to feel more grindy than it actually does, because I had heard, oh, this is a game where you're basically just fighting one big monster after another. So in my mind, I'm thinking back to Shadow of the Colossus and imagining having to fight the same fucking, bull demon 15 times.
Yeah, to farm
times.
Colossi.
Yeah, to farm Colossi. And I was thinking, I don't see how that could be a compelling rinse, wash, repeat experience. Hmm. But in actuality, you really do go. I mean, it is that you move from boss to boss to boss. There's not a whole lot of you're not spending a ton of your time picking vegetables. You know, you're not spending any time really at all just killing lobey little guys just for the hell of it. You are generally hunting a beast.
Yeah.
And every time you do that hunt, even if it's the same monster, it feels a little different because maybe a different part of the beast is cut off. And so he is accessing different abilities, or maybe this time, a larger monster shows up and attacks that one or gets distracted.
That's the funny part where I was hunting something and then this huge other T-Rex thing came in. And it's whoa.
Whoa, exactly. Yeah. And those, patched together in these really, fun storytelling scenes, right? Yeah. Where they're interacting with their environment in really crazy ways. It's almost like they took one core boss design and then had that boss fight experience feel different in each location that you could be fighting that boss in the world.
Yeah.
To create quite a bit of diversity with only one enemy. And it feels great.
Yeah. The other thing that I like about it, and I was actually looking forward to this aspect and it has not disappointed yet, is that there's something kind of charming about, I mean, clearly this game is a massive undertaking. It probably cost an ungodly amount of money and there's lots of skilled people working on it, but it's kind of janky as fuck.
Definitely. Yeah.
And there's something charming where it's like, man, this is one of the first huge games of 2018. And at certain points it feels like it's barely holding together.
Yeah.
And there's kind of an old school charming aspect to that where the game is kind of reaching beyond, a little bit beyond what it's capable of.
Yes. Yep.
Both in terms of clarity of systems and even the graphics of it. I mean, there's just a lot of things where it's like, man, this game is really swinging for the fences and it's sloppy in a really fun way.
Yep. And especially in a multiplayer world, that adds silliness to your play experience that, in my opinion, is super fun, right? Because every time someone oops, I fucked up and stepped on an electric toad and now I'm stunned for 5 minutes, or I got one shot by a dragon breath because I was poorly positioned and somehow the monster triggered from something else, right? All of those things make for just weird, wacky moments that are just great, fun co-op storytelling experiences.
Yeah, so far it's made a good first impression, albeit one that at first man, there's just a lot of, every single menu is a cluttered mess.
Yep.
And
it still is 11 hours in. It's still I don't know how half this stuff is happening.
But then you just realize, well, I'm just going to roll with it and walk around this field and farm these things and see what happens.
Exactly. I mean, all of that complication goes away when you're basically doing a rodeo bull on an enormous T-Rex.
Yeah. 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 I'm looking forward to putting more time into it. I mean, I'm sure it's just a wildly, long game, but we'll just see how the rest of this goes. I'm looking forward to doing more multiplayer.
Yeah, it feels almost like Destiny, and I think especially in a time where Destiny 2 is struggling so much, it'll be interesting to see how this particular title, now that it's on the next gen consoles as well, sort of matures throughout the year. I don't know what kind of, I know they've supported the game really well in the past on the other platforms. I'd be curious to see how that sort of evolves as the year goes on.
This is its opportunity.
Now's the time.
That's the time to chop up all those tails.
Strike while the meat is hot and ready to harvested.
I'm such an idiot. I couldn't figure out how to roast the meat until I reread the little tooltip, and it was like, if you listen to the tune, that's when you know when to take your meat off of the fire.
Oh my god, yeah, and it's like da 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 da, bap, and then it's just
and even then I still fucked it up 3 times in a row.
Oh, yeah, easy, yeah.
There's just a bunch of weird little janky charming things about that game.
Yeah,
and also those cat things, those palicos are really
creepy.
Oh my
god, yes. And they're constantly making cat puns.
Yes.
But on the plus side, I'm never going to get sick of that cooking animation. I find it so damn adorable.
Oh man, when he places the little garnish on the top.
Yes, with like immense care, like a ninja or something. It's awesome.
All right. Well, we will certainly be checking in with Monster Hunter probably throughout the months here.
Yep.
So we'll leave it here for now. Experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our campsite in the woods. Come on down. Help us with our own hunt for more listeners. Leave us a review.
Bring your furry
iTunes.
Vests.
Yes, exactly. Bring your furry weeb jackets and stuff. There's some armor in Monster Hunter, by the way, that is just like... Mwah. Just choice like Final Fantasy level of like ridiculousness.
Cool. Well, until next time, everyone, thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time we